This IBA podcast focuses on the global financial crisis. Key figures discuss how the crisis has unfolded, responses to it, and the ongoing need for cultural change. Examining the issues are Christine Lagarde, Managing Director of the International Monetary Fund, Ben Bernanke, Chair of the Federal Reserve from 2006 to 2014, and Chris Dodd, one of the architects of the US Dodd-Frank Act, heralded as the most sweeping change to financial supervision since the Great Depression. IMF Managing Director Christine Lagarde.
Few would disagree that unethical behavior and excessive risk-taking in the financial sector played a major role in precipitating the global financial crisis, which a few countries are still in the process of recovering from. Excessive risk-taking is unethical, even if it does not involve fraudulent behavior. And that is because of the very special nature and role of the financial sector and the financial service industry. The goal of the financial industry must be not only to maximize the wealth and the return for its shareholders, but it is also to serve society by supporting sustainable and stable economic activity. But when the financial sector subordinates this core responsibility to its own self-interest, there is clearly high risk of ethical violations. A further problem is the perception of impunity. Think, for instance, of the whistleblower who refused to accept his share of the $16.5 million award from the US Securities and Exchange Commission in protest for the lack of government action against illicit behavior of senior bank executives. So what can we do? Well, just as with corruption in the public sector, addressing unethical behavior in the financial industry requires mutually reinforcing strategies. The IMF has been actively calling for more intrusive supervision following the crisis. And we support the excellent work that is done by some of the regulators and supervisors around the world to actually do so. Our own work has also shown that changing incentives related to compensation practices can help realign financial rewards with long-term performance of the firm. For example, financial authorities in the United Kingdom have issued regulations allowing remuneration to be clawed back in cases of misconduct by senior executives over an extended period of time. Because the financial crisis is fading away for some, a recent survey found that over 50% of executives within the financial service industry continue to feel that in order to succeed, they will need to be flexible on ethical standards. This is troubling. All good principles and intentions on ethics and integrity will only be taken seriously if the top leaders act as role models and send clear messages of zero tolerance. The G30 report on banking conduct and culture revealed that banks which had successfully embedded an ethical culture were those where the executive team set a strong example by sanctioning improper practices in a transparent and consistent manner.
Ben Bernanke, Chairman of the Federal Reserve from 2006 to 2014.
There were areas like, for example, in the repo market, where short-term investments were collateralized, where we thought that would be stable because people had collateral. But in fact, they nevertheless lost confidence in the collateral, in the borrowing firms, and they panicked, pulled out their security. The thing about banking panic, it's like a fire in a crowded theater. You know, it's not rational collectively for everybody to run, but for any individual to run when everyone else is running is understandable. And that's what we had, was a broad-based panic where fear dominated the financial system and brought the system nearly to a halt. The public money became available and was invested broadly in the banking system. That stabilized the system, after which the banks were able to get private funding. All the money was paid back. I mean, once that money was available, then capital investments were made in these firms to stabilize them. And this was in October of 2008. By the spring of 2009, the system was pretty stabilized, and we were already in a process of doing stress testing of the banks to find out how much capital they had. And once that was clarified, then generally speaking, they were able to raise private sector capital, replace the public capital, and repay it. So once we saw that it was a panic and understood the full nature of the thing by, say, the fall of 2007, at that point, we were generally pretty aggressive. Now, I wouldn't say that every single thing we did was exactly right, but we did, you know, use all the tools that we could come up with, and we were able to stabilize the system over the next 6 months. In the end, though, only one firm, Lehman, actually failed. I think that without our intervention, many more would have failed, and that globally, the financial system would have been in chaos for a considerable time. I think a lot of progress has been made. We've done a lot to increase the amount of capital in the banking system, so banks have a lot more reserves to deal with problems. We've strengthened their funding. I think very importantly that there's now a set of policies in place that will help policymakers unwind a failing firm that comes close to failure. In 2008, we were dealing on the weekend with failing financial giants without any adequate tools for either stabilizing them or unwinding them in a way that would be safe for the system as a whole. We have what's called the Orderly Liquidation Authority. Mm-hmm. We have living wills. We have requirements that bank holding companies, other financial holding companies, hold not only adequate capital, equity, but also convertible bonds, bonds that can be shifted into equity in extremis. So I don't want to overstate the case. I'm not saying those problems are gone. It's still very much a work in progress. But at least now there is a framework for dealing with these unstable situations that did not exist in 2008. And the reforms that have taken place have focused on a couple of things. One is to make the derivatives more transparent so that there's more information about who owns what and what exposures there are. And banks in particular have been forced through the stress testing mechanism, for example, to better understand their own exposures as to different types of fundamental shocks. The other change is that financial institutions are being strongly pushed to trade derivatives on central counterparties who stand between them rather than on a purely bilateral basis, which makes it both makes the trading more transparent, but also means that if there are losses, they won't be transmitted as quickly to the counterparties. And I think it's really important that we continue to work hard and be vigilant to make sure that we're attacking these issues. The crisis was only 8 years ago. We don't want to forget that. We want to make sure that those problems are addressed. At the same time, I just can't agree with those who say that nothing has been done, where, you know, things are just like they were before the crisis. This is not true. There have been a lot of changes made, and I think mostly for the better. I hope that, you know, the leaders of financial institutions will appreciate, I think I'm sure many do, that an ethical approach which takes into makes the first consideration the well-being of customers and of the stability of the system, that's really the best, that's the best for business, you know, that deceptive policies or unethical policies, even if they generate short-run gains, they're not the best way to have a healthy industry, healthy firm in the longer term.
Chris Dodd, who served for 30 years as a senator and gave his name to the Dodd-Frank Act, enacted in response to the crisis.
I object when people talk about the crisis of 2008. Actually, the crisis began several years before then, and it was an unwillingness on the part of many to see it. Even when you had the collapse of Bear Stearns in March of 2008, as late as that, people were denying this was a problem. There was a lot of information out there, but the critical players that could have been doing something refused. And the fact is, we lost two of our largest investment banks. Two others were merged. Two turned into banking organizations. The other one was merged. You had your commercial banks, two of the largest, disappeared. In fact, the largest insurance company in the world was nationalized. The largest credit unions were disappeared and gone. I mean, this was $13 trillion in national wealth, 26 million jobs, close to 5 million homes. One of the things we did in the bill is the Financial Services Oversight Board. And it sounds, I wonder why it took legislation to do this. You would have thought common sense would have dictated something like this, where you have the major financial regulators meet. The bill only requires them meet four times or so a year. They've been actually meeting with great regularity since the legislation was enacted. And there was some resistance in Treasury to have to sit at the same table with these lesser institutions. But they're now doing it, and they're looking over the horizon. What's occurring internationally? What's occurring with institutions? What's occurring in new product lines? Are any of these things posing substantial risk, systemic risk? And that was missing in all of this. The next crisis is not going to just involve Europe and the United States and marginally other places around the world. The next crisis is going to include India and Brazil. It's going to include Russia. It's going to include China, obviously. It's going to be far more difficult to contain. One of my goals in this bill was to try and harmonize, not duplicate, but harmonize a regulatory framework so that you'd end up with a lot more of some similarities within the regulatory structure globally. And my hope was that we'd be able to harmonize some of these this rulemaking process, particularly on capital. That was a major thing. And the legislation allows for breakup of banks. I mean, people don't realize this, but part of our provisions specifically allow for a bank to be broken up if it gets, not so much how size it is, but whether or not it's systemically poses a risk financially. The culture has got to change. The leadership has got to recognize that they're doing themselves and the industry and the country a great deal of disservice if they're not more forthcoming in what they're doing and how things are working. So my plea would be that there has to be a greater appreciation of how fragile these institutions are in terms of their reputational value in the country. And it is really important that the leaders of these institutions understand that and find ways to communicate with the general public.